Leslie Horman, Gregory Stieber, welcome.
Hello, Julia.
Thanks so much for having us, Julia.
By some standards, every day is fairy tale day in youth theater land.
Yes.
I know that. What makes this annual springtime celebration unique and especially special for you and yours?
Well, it's become a tradition. This is the fourth annual Fairy Tale Fest, and it gives us not only a chance to collaborate with our arts partners, Dance Collective and the Ballet, Fame. You know, everyone has fairy tales that connect us together.
Sure.
Doesn't matter if you're dancing them, singing them, doing an arts and crafts about them, or acting them. But it's really a great, great opportunity for collaboration. In addition to the fact that the fest allows us to showcase our ever-growing arts campus, because we have performances in all the different venues in that hub. In Sweetwater, their youth program, they come and they perform live music under the tent outside. So it's really a showcase of the different great arts programs for the youth of our area.
Indeed. Okay, what's the biggest challenge in sharing a traditional fairy tale today, especially in your case, live and on stage?
The thing that I think is the biggest challenge is that you can pick any given weekend in the fort and there's 1,000 different activities going on. So, you know, you're vying for entertainment time. You're vying for ticket revenue from other venues, other organizations. But I'll tell you, people come and they're so ready to, you know, get involved in the fairy tale, because all kids love fairy tales. All kids love to meet the fairy tale characters. And what doesn't matter if you're one or 101, everyone has a favorite fairy tale. And their fairy tales can be modern day or, you know, old timey.
They certainly are universal.
Yes.
But you're in a lot of competition with a lot of pop culture and timely and cutting edge things. And does that matter?
That's why it's so great that we have this adaptation, which is really modern and fun and funky.
James and the Giant Peach. Now, Gregory, you have written and adapted and directed a world of youth theater wonderment, to be sure. Where does Dahl rank on your personal creative author scale?
Well, when you read it, I think he's true to one major component in trapping of a fairy tale. It's dark. It begins within even the first page. A six-year-old boy witnesses the murder of his parents on the very first page. So it's a dark story, and then it has the usual formula of a hero or heroine experiencing challenges and meeting opposition, but then coming out on top and triumphing through ingenuity. And always there's that little help from your friends element that a lot of fairy tales has that's really strong in this one, James and the Giant Peach.
Great, and certainly incredibly traditional, despite the, shall we say, off-the-wall setting.
Off-the-wall setting. First thing I thought is, wow, we're going to need a really, really huge peach on a stage that floats on an ocean, pulled by seagulls, gets attacked by cloud men, crashes into a rainbow, all these different elements. Now, I had read the book before as a young man, but this time I approached it specifically as a playwright. And I looked at those scenic elements immediately and the things that needed to be represented in the story and thought, how do we do this with a realistic sense? Because, you know, I have a big, huge Broadway budget, which is, I think, is a gift, because what we're allowed to do then and allows our audiences to use our imaginations and use our hearts to see what his story really was trying to tell us.
Great. And in fact, how are you steberizing this adaptation?
The copyright is 1961. And I thought it's one of those stories that we read as kids, but you keep on reading it when you're not a kid anymore and you somehow go back to it. So I thought about my generation and my friends and my family, and we're getting to that point in our lives where we're learning about loss. We're losing our own parents and our own loved ones. And so I've added a storyline in it where a man in his 40s is packing up his childhood bedroom with the help of his young son after the death of his mother. And all of his things are left out. And little boy says, wow, grandma left all your stuff out. And he says, yeah, like a shrine. He's showing his son all these things, the Stretch Armstrong he used to play with, and the board game Battleship. The things from our youth are in this room, and then they find the book. So I thought, well, if we're looking at it from this man's perspective, when he was his son's age, that would have put him in, you know, the early, mid-80s. He's seeing the story through an 80s perspective. And even we have the addition of a black light poster being in the room. I'm not going to give it away, but you might see a few black light segments in the show. Things that would be lending toward a young audience right now sharing this experience with their parents or their grandparents. So it's a shared experience of theater going, kids being told the story, as Tim Burton told them a couple of years ago in the movie, which most of the kids know. So it's just kind of bringing together these two worlds.
Sounds like the best of both worlds, as a matter of fact, and 80s is a great pop culture hook.
As Leslie and I just kept on finding out, we just go, oh, we need seagulls, you know, to pull the big peach. Flock of Seagulls was, you know, a very famous band in the 80s, and it was an iconic look, too. So not only some music and these kind of themes helping the show along, but just the audience will certainly note the look of these different iconic figures from the 80s.
Great. Leslie, how familiar with this era are the young actors? Maybe more to the point, how adaptable are they whenever you ask them to jump into an era?
Well, their parents are totally sold on it. I had a parent meeting and I explained the premise and they were very, very stoked because this is, you know, it's during their heyday. The kids are really into the whole retro-ness of it. And they like looking up these bands on YouTube. So it's kind of an 80s education for them as well.
And a point of pride that they're going to be able to share it with people of all ages.
You bet. That's what makes it so fun because it connects both generations with, you know, the love of the 80s. And it's, you know, there's a big fondness and a passion for retro.
This is a good hook for you to throw in for that reason.
It's a great hook. Man, we all love the 80s.
That's true.
Yeah, and even the kids that are being introduced to it, they're really into it.
Okay, one thing, Dowell walks a fine line between mischievous and macabre in his stories. Is that also true of your adaptation?
Absolutely. The book was written in 61. We've learned quite a bit about abuse over the years. So there's an awareness of it. He is left with two aunts that are unapologetically and quite just bluntly physically abusive to the kid. We do address that, but I think what's important in it is that this boy finds his way through it, through support. And then he ends up, you know, persevering, coming out a stronger man. And then there's an element of understanding and forgiveness that comes through at the end. And that with a good heart and a good mind and good support around you, that happens. It's right there in the book, and I think it's right there in our production, too.
Great. Okay, beyond this production, and a grand one it sounds like it's going to be, this year's whole festival lineup, tell us how you got the bug theme, which is certainly included in James and the Giant Peach.
Yes.
And where else are we going with it?
They're the team. The insects are the team, the support team. Yeah, we have Dance Collective doing Crumpet the Trumpet, which is a Philharmonic original piece about a little trumpet who finds his way in the music world. And then the ballet is going to be Dancing the Lorax, which you have your environmental issues addressed. You know, fairy tales can be told in so many different ways. And it's your classic fairy tale. You have your hero, you have your villains, and these are some of the most iconic villains out there. But, you know, everyone lives happily ever after, and good triumphs over evil.
I hope so. Asus story is a wonderful hit, and you just can't get enough perspectives on environmental issues. Do the kids take to that?
They do. It's such a huge thing now, the environment. And, you know, Dr. Seuss was way ahead of his time.
Indeed.
I mean, he wrote this in the 70s at the advent of the whole Earth Day phenomena.
And timely it is now, too.
It is
good
indeed.
Good for all of you.
Mm-hmm.
So long-term wise, what seeds do you hope the whole fairy tale festival is planting?
Well, we've had fairy tales for centuries. It's the classic good versus evil. It's the backbone of all of our storytelling. It's a huge literature component. So kids take away, you know, the beauty of the book. And look, this book comes alive through this incredibly innovative, fun and funky adaptation. You know, they're getting a literature lesson. It's just a great, great way to teach book appreciation.
Sure, and it's right here, right now. As a director, Gregory, do you think that kids as actors, do they get what they're doing?
Of course they do. And I think what's wonderful to watch them in the rehearsal process go through is putting equal passion into playing the villain and playing the hero because they know how important both roles are in getting the story told and a lesson being learned. And we make it fun, whether the hero, the villain, an insect that has one line, they know the importance of providing an audience with a really dynamic, alive story. So they want to come back again. We want our audience to keep on coming back to us and enjoying what we're providing them and the kids. And it starts with our kids and ends with our kids.
That's a great point and good luck on all of that. It's so necessary as well as so desirable indeed. Now, before I let you get back to the theater and getting ready for this great, big, wonderful festival, I'd like your thoughts on the art form. Why are fairy tales and really storytelling in general something vital to the kids who are presenting them as well as the audience who's there enjoying?
Well, in this high-tech world, it's definitely a throwback to high touch. You know, it's one-on-one. You know, the original storytellers, the original stories were passed word of mouth, and it's beautiful that we can keep with that. It's an ancient tradition that I think needs to be upheld, and we can never, ever get away from live performance because that is where we have a venue to gather and to examine the human experience through these stories.
Well, that's just exactly what I would say, what Leslie just said. Along with that, the responsibility that is given young actors to keep on strengthening their technique within that storytelling, voice, diction, movement, because Leslie's right, we bury our faces in small devices now and are told everything. What we can never let go, we can never forget the importance of a voice and a body and a mind on stage. So it's just only my privilege as an instructor and a director to guide the kids that way, to remind them that they have this amazing facility that's never to be taken for granted.
Leslie Horman is Executive and Artistic Director of Fort Wayne Youth Theater and Gregory Stieber, Director of James and the Giant Peach. Leslie, Gregory, from Once Upon a Time to Happily Ever After, have a great Fairy Tale Fest.
Thanks so much, Julia.
Thanks, Julia.